Hal Nidwiedzki is the author of The Peep Diaries, How We're Learning to Love Watching Ourselves and Our Neighbors. He says that in 2008, we entered a new era, the era of peep culture.
Peep culture is the evolution of pop culture. So in the past, we had our anointed celebrities, and they entertained us. They sang, they danced, they acted. All of that was scripted performance. In the age of peep culture, we are moving toward being entertained by our friends, our neighbors, our family, ourselves, in really unscripted performances that are generally based on the happenings of our everyday lives. So we have this move from the pop culture to the peep culture.
This is where we get to the word that really caught my attention, and that's overshare. It really is a key part of peep culture, isn't it?
Good old overshare, one of the new words of the year coined by Webster's a couple of years back. I think that overshare entered the popular lexicon for this very reason, that, hey, why are you telling me this? And there's this confusion about why people are suddenly going online and sharing the intimate details of their lives, whether it's their addiction problems or their sex life or their preferences or the fact that they just had a bowl of soup or they're heading to their spin class. This is the issue of overshare. And to me, it's emblematic of a real confusion about why this is happening.
Isn't it funny in a way, though, because we have this big deal about privacy. Everybody wants to maintain their privacy. And peep culture is really sort of the opposite of privacy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like the anti-privacy. You know, when I was thinking about this whole question of privacy as I investigated peep culture, what I really concluded was that people don't actually care all that much about their privacy. In fact, what people want is they want the ability to use their privacy as a commodity, or what they're learning about peep culture and its possibilities is that their privacy has a value and can be used as a commodity. So more and more, we're asked, for instance, to exchange certain aspects of our lives for a free service like Facebook. We go on Facebook, it's free. A lot of the people I talk to when I go to speak at a university or a high school, I'll say, why are you on Facebook? They don't really know why they're on Facebook. They don't know what the exchange that they are getting into actually entails. So we give Facebook access to our likes and dislikes, our comments, our pictures, all kinds of information, which they then pair with advertisements and amalgamate and sell in different ways. And we get something back, too. We get this free service called Facebook, which allows us to connect with all kinds of people in different ways. So this is a kind of privacy bargain that we're making. And as people get more into peep culture, they make bigger and bigger bargains. So, for instance, you might talk about someone who broadcasts their life 24 hours a day on the internet. And believe it or not, there are several thousand people across the U.S. who are doing that right now. And they're saying, here's everything. Here's all of my privacy. I completely disavow the concept of privacy, and I get something back in exchange, which is a much, much deeper sense of being constantly in the presence of others. Communities develop, friendships develop, unorthodox relationships develop, and you might even be exchanging your privacy for that holy grail in the celebrity age, fame.
Boy, the thing about this that's so astonishing, you talked about how lonely we are as a society these days and how that has probably, more than anything else, generated peep culture. But to put your life on the internet for 24 hours a day, that seems like the very definition of TMI.
Yeah, I mean, you got your too much information, your overshare, all the rest of it. And that's the sort of knee-jerk criticism of this. But I really like to look at the underlying benefits and negatives. And what is this really saying about society and the people who are doing this? The loneliness aspect has much more to do with how we've structured our society into little suburban units connected to cars, connected to workplaces, the death of public space, the fact that we will now be moving around much more, disconnected from our families. We no longer have multi-generations living in a house in small towns. So you really do have this sense of the anonymous that hurts people and haunts them in ways that I don't think that they or our society at large fully understand. So along come these new technologies And we're experimenting with them. We're reaching out through these new technologies to see if we can ameliorate some of the negative consequences of mass society. So I think we have to be a little bit more
tolerant of the experimentation.
Yeah, tolerant of the experimentation. A lot of people will go online and say, why are you doing this? You know, you're a fool, you're a loser.
But obviously they're looking or they wouldn't know that it was happening.
Well, that's the other thing is we're all implicated in this. It's very easy to dismiss people, for instance, who go on reality TV and parade around like lunatics. But we are also watching this in greater numbers, you know, to then go onto YouTube and post a comment below a video of a car crash and say, this isn't entertainment. You people are sick for watching this. Well, you just watched it.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, how much are we fooling ourselves? In the Peep Diaries, your book, you talk about how you held a party and invited your 700 Facebook friends to join you for a drink at a bar in Toronto. Well, I'll let you say what happened.
Well, it didn't turn out very well, unfortunately. And even though I had ultimately got a positive response, either saying they were coming or maybe coming from around 100 people, in the end, only one person came to my Facebook party, which was pretty sad and devastating and really did speak to what the medium is. You know, people talk about it as a loose connection, not a strong connection. When I was writing the book, I went to visit the guys who were at that time embarking on what is now known as Twitter. And I talked to them and I said, what is it that makes you really think that this Twitter thing is going to take off? Because at the time, they were considered sort of the lunatic fringe of peep culture. People said, who is ever going to want to do this? And they said to me, it's connection with low expectation. And that's what people want. And that phrase really struck with me as something that explains why we love peep culture so much, the idea of connection.
You've looked at this from the outside, of course, but you've also looked at it from the inside. You made a documentary you've called Peep Culture, which is the same thing as in the book, I guess. And I was astonished you went so far as to have cameras installed in your house, right?
Mm-hmm.
You were one of those people who let your life be seen, I don't know whether every minute for 24 hours a day, but for many of them anyway, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was quite the event, to say the least. You know, I wrote the book, and then I met a documentary crew, a director and a producer who said, we love this book, we love these ideas, and now we want you to try it out. And I said, oh, God, really? This is not going to be good. But I couldn't resist, and I learned a lot from it. First of all, I learned that marriages are not as strong as you think they are. I'm still married, but just barely. When the cameras went into the house and my wife banished me to the basement so that I could sleep under the constant scrutiny of whoever cared to watch all over the world, things definitely took a very interesting turn.
Her attitude toward the cameras was a little different from yours, you're saying?
Yes. It was gradual where I'd said, well, we're just going to have one camera. And then it turned out we were going to have two cameras. And then as it turned out, we had about 10 cameras all over the first floor in the basement of the house.
And she didn't take the kids and move to Montreal for the period of...
Well, she certainly threatened to. And it almost came to that. And then that's part of the reason the cameras had to go.
But what did it mean for you? You were willing to do this. And you, in fact, did live your life in front of the cameras. Did you find that it changed who you thought you were?
Very much so. And I came into it very skeptical. And I had this idea that I had already studied peep culture. I had already looked at its effects on people in society. And I wasn't going to get sucked into it. But very, very quickly, I got pulled into it. I was, for instance, absolutely obsessed with how many people were watching me. What kinds of actions and scenarios would spike my viewership? And this is something that I was really surprised by because I had sort of scoffed at this and written about it in the book and said, you know, this is so sad that this woman, every time she writes a blog post, she comes back in an hour and checks how many people have read this and is despondent if she doesn't have, and that was her word, she's despondent if she doesn't have at least 100 readers. And yet there I was doing the exact same thing and going, oh, it was a bad day. Only a couple of hundred people tuned into the HAL broadcast today. What did I do wrong? And I would lie in my basement, unable to sleep at night, thinking up scenarios so that I could enact the next day. And
what did you find that worked best? I'm just curious.
You're going to really like this, Jim. The most popular camera by far was the bathroom cam, where you could get a very kind of hazy not particularly revealing picture of my doings in the bathroom. And this camera would have a good solid 100 or so people always watching it. They were always watching this channel, no matter if I was in the bathroom or not. And they would talk amongst themselves. You know, they would sort of say, is anyone going to come in here? Who comes in here? What happens when the person enters this bathroom? And have these lengthy dialogues about what they were hoping to see.
In the film, at one point, you said, is there any point in living an undocumented life? It sounds as though you're saying, we like to have some documentation of our lives, but it's a question of how much documentation is going to satisfy your need.
If we move into the question of our lives being recognized, ourselves being noticed just for being ourselves, so we're not noticed for how much money we can make or what kind of weird habits and fetishes and strange hobbies we've come up with, but we're noticed just for being alive. This is the human yearning that really underpins peep culture. Why can't we have that? We should have that. We need to have that, but we don't really get that in contemporary society. So we struggle with what we are now being offered, which are these broadcast opportunities we've never had before. And I think that people do seek out attention, do want to be noticed, but I don't think that there is some inherent aspect of humanity that compels us to tweet. I don't think that's true. I think those things really come out of the systems of society that we've put in place, the pop culture that we grew up with that always told us, you know, you're important, you're great, you're fantastic, you can be a celebrity. And then all of a sudden comes new opportunities, new broadcast mediums that we never had before where we could actually put that rhetoric in place. The story of pop culture, which has always been the story of you, suddenly becomes something that we can actually enact in our personal everyday lives. And so we go for it without really thinking about the consequences.
Hal Nidwiecki is the author of The Peep Diaries, How We're Learning to Love Watching Ourselves and Our Neighbors. What do you think of the idea of peep culture? You can share your thoughts with us via Facebook or Twitter. Or you can send us email via our website, ttbook.org. It's always nice to hear from you.